Hello, and welcome to Returning to Us, a podcast that gives you strategies and tips for how to hack your brain, build and strengthen relationships, and to teach people how to recognize and neutralize their emotional states. I'll discuss emotional intelligence and regulation, how food and exercise impact the body and brain, and share lessons from my own lived experiences. I'm Lauren Spiegelmeyer, the founder of the Behavior Hub, which is an organization that works to reduce the stressors of raising and educating children through a brain and biology-based lens. In these episodes, I'll share stories and strategies from my own life, work, and research, answer listener questions, and wrap it up with a try-at-home tip. Decades worth of information in just minutes. You ready? Hello, hello. We are back for another episode in this little series of kind of behavior support, trauma-informed practices, and just better ways of responding to children and adults, because some of these things really apply to adults too. Actually, a lot of these things apply to adults. We are going to go through this part of the series. This is probably about halfway through the series. And then I'm going to pause because the next couple weeks I'm going to do some things focused on the holidays and slowing down and managing behavior and the chaos and then planning for the new year as a family, as a whole, as a collective. So we will restart this series and do the last 3 to 4 episodes of behavior regulation, behavior support, emotional regulation in January. So today we're going to focus on, and I've talked about this before, but it's worth talking about just about every day. What is the sequence for teaching emotional regulation, whether you are 3, 13, 33, in your 80s, whatever? How do we all go through this flow of regulating our emotions? And here's what I have come to. One, Viktor Frankl has this amazing quote I've heard so many times, and you maybe have heard this as well. But it is said that between the stimulus and the response, there is a space, aka between like the sensory input, the trigger, whatever it is in the world that ignites us and our response, aka the behavior, there is a short little space. For adults, maybe a little bit longer because we're a little bit more emotionally mature. For kids, that space is real short, real quick. In that space is our power to choose our response. It's not a lot of time because that space isn't real big, but that is where the change happens. That's where we got to catch kids and get the change in place in those moments. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. In our response, these are my words, lies our healing, lies our pattern breaking, lies the behavior change. So how do we catch this? Okay, first step. I think it is incredibly important. I believe in my work, it is incredibly important to categorize your emotional state. You have to be aware of your emotional state in order to change it. You have to be aware of maybe what the stimulus is, but you definitely have to be aware of what the response is. And you have to be aware of the sequence flowing from stimulus into response. So categorizing your emotions is the number one step. It's the number one thing I teach kids. And I start very, very young. The easiest way for me to do this with kids is a color-coded system. So we have usually a color-coded chart. It's always 4 zones. Sometimes the zones are represented by like movie characters, book characters, whatever it is. But there are 4 zones. You've got a low energy zone, like a blue zone, sadness, sickness, tiredness. You have a green zone, which is where you're happy, you're focused, you're calm. That's the optimal zone. That's where we want to be most of our time if we can be, but we aren't there all the time because we're human beings. And then you've got the yellow space. The yellow space is the space in between. That's where the change happens. That's where you're getting frustrated. You're getting upset. Emotions are elevating. And then red is emotions are taking over. Angry, rage, frustration to like the next level, excited to where you like kids can't control or manage it. So that's the response. It is important to know that we go from blue to green to yellow to red lots of times throughout the day. And that's okay. And that's normal. And it's not bad. And it's not wrong. We all go through these emotions. We're all human beings who have big feelings. What we need to know is when we leave that green zone, because that's the moment where we can change our response. So if we teach kids that we are leaving the green zone and we go into the yellow, we have a little bit of time in the yellow before we hit the red, or we're in the green and we're going to pop down to the blue, we might even want to try and do something in the response before we get to blue. This is important. This is the core, the foundation of the Behavior Hubs program. This is the first thing I teach. It is the baseline that all kids must know and adults. Okay, so you recognize your flow of emotion through these different zones. You begin to understand that there's this space where you can elicit change. Okay, great. My next step for kids, and I have one of these too, so it's good for adults, is to take space or remove yourself from the energy of the situation. So if we're in a classroom and a child is triggered, it's helpful to have a space for the child to go into in the classroom or in another room, possibly, but better to have it in the classroom where the child can de-escalate. Like just removal, not a timeout, not a punishment, not a consequence. It's just a preventative space that we can go to just chill. It's like a chill zone, zen zone, calm space. This is a tool. It's a tool to be able to gather yourself, because sometimes in the elevation and energy of the moment where you're triggered, it's really hard to get it together. This works for adults too. When I am working through something really challenging with an individual or an organization, sometimes in the heat of the moment, I can't come up with a solution. But if I take a walk, or if I'm at home and I go to my meditation space, everything changes. I have a chance to physically step out of that elevated zone into a much more neutralized zone, and that brings my body back down. I truly feel this is a really important tool. Is it absolutely necessary? No, because you're going to be in the community, in the world, in vacation, traveling home for the holidays, and you might not have this space. Now you can set up a temporary one, but we have to learn to regulate without this space too. But this is just a tool to use to help us get there. Okay, step number three. We recognize we've left the green zone. Awesome. What do we do? That's the problem. Kids don't know what to do. They don't have the tools yet. So when they're in the green zone, we need to teach them the tools to use when they leave the green zone. They must be taught when they are in the green zone, because if they are in the yellow, the red, or the blue, they don't have full access to logic and reason and memory and storage. So we have to teach it when they're calm, when they're ready, when their ability to store information is available to them. If we try and teach these things when they're in the yellow or the red or the blue, they're not going to remember them. We can model them when they're in those different zones, but in order for them to actually learn, store, and use the tool for change to happen, they have to learn them when they're calm. So we teach the tools when they're in the green zone, but we teach them to use them when they leave the green zone. And we practice so that when we get into the elevated state, the skill is there and ready for us to use because we practiced it so many times. Okay, so that's the core of the sequence. Steps 1, 2, 3. Categorize your emotions, potentially create a safe spot, safe space, use a calming tool to regulate, teach and practice those calming tools before we need them. That all sounds great. Okay, we're regulated. Great. Awesome. There's a fourth step. The fourth step is problem solving, because sometimes we get into these situations again and we're like, shoot, I don't know how to get out of the situation. I don't know how to prevent the situation. I don't know what to do when I'm in this situation. So if we problem solve, go through the four steps of problem solving, we can improve the odds or chances that this situation won't happen again, or that kids will know what to do in that situation. Okay, so let's save that. I'm going to do a quick Actually, let's go through the four steps. Okay, the four steps are you felt, I felt, problem, solution. So you might say something like, I think you were feeling, because you don't know how they were feeling, but you're going to take a guess at it. I think you were feeling, insert blah, blah, blah. On the other hand, I was feeling really worried because you were late to come home. What's the problem? When you get home late, it might be unsafe. It might be dangerous. You know, whatever you deem the problem is. It's short, it's sweet. All these statements. So 1, 2, 3. You felt, I felt, problem. We don't give a lot of details. We don't go on and on. We don't use multiple sentences. It's very straight. You felt this way, or I think you felt this way. I felt this way. The problem is, and then I invite them to come up with solutions. Let's see if we can come up with some ideas that work for both of us. Then we write all these ideas down. the good ones and the bad ones, right, all get written down because they're all solutions. And then we mutually agree on one solution to use. I do this as young as like kids three. For kids that are intellectually able at three, I might hide it in a game. Like I might play like a block game or a back and forth turn taking game or Legos or something, but I still go through these steps. And then we use that solution. And if that solution doesn't work, we come back to the sheet that we recorded all of the answers on, because maybe we need to try another idea, or maybe we need to come up with some new ideas. Very simple, very short. The conversation should not last long at all. If it does last long, you're going to lose them. Okay, let's review. Categorize. If you can name it, you can tame it, says Dan Siegel. Also, naming and categorizing our feelings really helps us to work through them. If we don't learn to work through them, then cellularly, things get lodged in our bodies. I'm going to link a couple resources in the show notes for you around this, like sample charts and other posts I have done about this, writings I have done on this, lots of things. Calm space, calming corner, zen zone. When we create this physical space to go to in a home or classroom, it helps to make abstract emotions more concrete, because we have a moment to kind of see them, name them, and reflect on them. And as we learn to do that and we recognize those feelings, we can acknowledge them, and then we can move through them. We don't just want to bypass them. Children have feelings. They're big feelings, and those feelings are appropriate. It's the response to the feeling that might be inappropriate. Breaks are good. Overstimulation, not so good. We need to have a space to release, to vent, to get the frustration, anger, silliness, playfulness out and get back into ourselves. Biggest thing about that space, it should be a calm, peaceful, quiet place with not too much stimulation, not too many different things in it. So we want no technology. We want some kind of like physical space barrier. So it's like truly a separate part of the room. Maybe some visuals that are calming, but not too many visuals. Maybe some sensory toys, but not too many, because we don't want to, again, overload those senses. The point is to understimulate or bring stimulate down. And we want to make sure that we teach them how to use this, when to use this, and why to use this. Lots of tools for the calming corners, like visuals, sensory tools. I will list them in the show notes. And I would highly encourage you to kind of like map this out, to draw it out, to lay it out, so you know where it's going to go and what it's going to include, so you can kind of forecast what it looks like for you. And then those self-regulation tools and skills that we need to teach. This is not an innate inborn skill. We just don't have these tools. We need to be taught them explicitly and practice them so that we can remember to use them when we're upset. We must first connect with kids in order to redirect them. So we must teach them the tools to use before they can access logic and reason to be able to be redirected. We have to kind of connect the parts of the brain that are going a little bit wild. And we should also know that one thing isn't going to work for every child. So we've got to apply that Goldilocks principle of like, everyone gets something a little bit different. It depends on what works for you. So what are a few examples of these tools that we could use? Breath work, bilateral movement, draw out emotions, writing things out, any type of creativity where we can do something that makes us feel like pleasure and happiness, and usually elements of creativity like painting, drawing, all they're rhythmic. There are like strokes and rhythm to those things. They can be really helpful. And then that sensory, like either getting the sensory like out, or, you know, doing something to stimulate our senses in a like a slow way, like one of those popper things, I think are good, because they, one, it can be rhythmic, but two, it has like a cause and effect, and it's just like soothing because it's so simple. It's so basic. It's a good sensory tool to let kids fidget with back in the sensory or the calm down corner. So many, many, many things kids can use as tools to calm down. I mean, I post about these on my blogs. I podcast about these. You can Google these. You can Pinterest these. Like the calm down strategies, the coping strategies are unlimited. Just pause and think about what might work for your kiddo. And then going through those steps of problem solving, making it short and sweet, not too many extra details. And then you've gone through the four steps of emotional regulation. Categorize, create a calm down space, teach the tools to use to calm down, and then problem solve. And then you're golden. and you work through those sequences and you kind of give feedback and error correction, and then we have happy, healthy adults. Ugh, only everyone could learn these skills. That takes me to today's listener question, which is actually very well tied to this general topic, which is when we are talking about behaviors and regulation, how do we address those things through the sensory lens? Like, what if a kid is understimulated or overstimulated? How do we feed that stimulation need in order to neutralize behaviors? I'm going to give you a couple of different areas of sensory support. These are good to use for those self-regulation tools. Heavy work, push, pull, lift, carry, crawl, move objects, or lift objects, pull objects of resistance or weight that is appropriate to the size of the child or the weight of the child. Deep pressure, weighted blankets, lap pads, weighted ties, anything with like some heavy pressure. Not too heavy though. It's again appropriate to their body size and their weight. Calming things like water, putty, kinetic sand, breathing, even sand can be calming. It can be messy, but it can also be calming, which kind of relates to tactile. So things that kids can toss, catch, touch that have different textures, a sensory table with like sand and beans and rice, all of those things are of different textures and can be really soothing. Also doing things that wake up the muscles, like massage of any sort. So you can like massage their hands, or they can use a foam roller or like a massage pet to kind of loosen up their muscles and get some oxygen flowing through them and get some things pumping into their brain that help to soothe them and calm them down. If they're a little bit wiggly and they need a little bit of wiggle support, gel-filled cushions, air-filled cushions, special seats, adjustable seats, air-inflated seats, just like anything at all that gives them some movement. If we're talking hand-eye coordination and just kind of like also like bilateral movement, doing things like walking, jumping, running, swinging, learning to button things, zipper things, buckle things, snap things, all of those things can be really calming. Sorting, categorizing, that can get the mental space more aligned and in order. And then just any like stretchy, squishy, fidgety objects or things that they can suck, blow, or chew on that are safe to put in their mouths, that oral stimulation can be really satisfying as well. To wrap up this show, I'm going to share with you our tried at home tip, which is 3 steps to move through emotion. Witness, allow, release. Witness is what is going on in your body, how you feel, how you're moving through those colored zones. Accept and allow those emotions, and then do something to release them. Tool, calming, coping strategy to release them. Witness, allow, and release. That is it for today's episode of Returning to Us podcast. Remember, try it at home tip, especially for you as an adult. Witness the emotion, allow the emotion, and then release the emotion. And if you are looking for more support in the areas of stress, trauma, behavior, or the brain, the Behavior Hub is a great place to look for coaching support for schools, for teachers, for admin, for parents, for families. And there's also university credit. You can take some of our courses and earn credit from the University of Pennsylvania towards your degree, or just side credits or credits towards a master's degree, whatever you so choose. If you'd like to learn more about any of that, the Behavior Hub website, any of that contact will come right to me first, or you can text me 717-693-7744. If you're looking for more of organizational support, or like whole group, whole business shift of how to manage emotions, manage stress, manage overwhelm, manage burnout, and improve company culture, happiness, well-being, productivity, FIVES is an organization I partnered with a woman named Jessica Doring, and we built this up to really support organizations to manage employees better, but also just interact with them better and create a way better, happier culture so people want to come to work and want to stay at work, or at least stay coming to work, continue to come to work, and are productive beings. Happier, healthier places to work and reduced stress. All right, that's it for today. Don't forget to lock in what you learned by sharing it with someone else. Until the next episode, I am Lauren Spiegelmeyer, and thanks for joining me.